Saturday Night Theatre.
My name is Alexandre Dumas. No, no, not the Alexandre Dumas, the author of The Count of Monte Cristo and all those novels. No, that's my exceedingly famous father. I am the son, Alexandre Dumas the younger, as they say. The year is 1852. The place? Paris. And last night, I had a triumph such as my father himself scarcely ever had in the theatre. My first play, The Lady of the Camellias, was given here at the Vaudeville, and as I say, a triumph. My father was kind enough to say afterwards he would have been proud to be the author. A generous remark, altogether worthy of him. As for the play itself, now that's a long story. A strange one, too, because so much of it, the first two acts, in fact, were taken directly from life. Yes. Yes, there was a real-life Lady of the Camellias. A creature so exquisite and so utterly doomed that... Well, we must go back a little. To the year 1851 and our first rehearsals here at the Vaudeville Theatre.
Marie and Marguerite by Derek Carton, with Emily Richard as the courtesan Marie Duplessis and Simon Shepherd as the writer Alexandre Dumas, and with Francis Jeter and Brett Usher as Madame Doche and Monsieur Fechter, the actors who played out the couple's passionate love affair in The Lady of the Camellias. Marie and Marguerite.
Very well, ladies and gentlemen. Can we have a little order, please? A little silence. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Now, let us resume. Silence, please! May we take Act 1, Scene 4 of my play? Page 18 of your scripts.
18.
Marguerite Gautier comes home from the theatre to find Varville in her sitting room, talking to her maid Nanine. Remember, please, Varville is one of those hopeless hangers-on that attractive women often have about them. We can have a little fun at his expense. Madame Doche, may we have the benefit of your attention, please, for Marguerite? Madame Doche, please.
I suppose I'm ready, Monsieur Dumas.
Very well, ladies and gentlemen. Let us take it at the top of the page. Marguerite says to her maid, Nanine, go and order us some supper. Madame Doche.
Go and order us some supper. Olympe is coming with a friend I met them at the theatre.
Nanine exits. Marguerite turns to Varville.
What are you doing here, Varville?
Isn't it my destiny in life always to be here, waiting for you?
I simply can't come home without finding you here. What do you want this time?
You know perfectly well, Marguerite.
Always the same thing, Varville. You are very monotonous.
And yet, at Honfleur last summer, you gave me some grounds for hope.
Ah, my dear Varville, that was at Honfleur and I was ill and bored. But here in Paris, things are different. I feel better, and I'm not bored.
I can understand. If one has the Duke de Mauriac dancing attendance and one is said at the same time to favor Monsieur de Giray.
I am free to love whoever I please, and it's no one's business, least of all yours. And if you have nothing more interesting to say, you had best leave.
I shall stay.
Very well, then. To the piano with you.
What must I play?
Oh, whatever you like. I don't care. Nanine, have you ordered supper?
Yes, madame.
What's that you're playing?
It's a waltz by Frédéric Chopin.
It's lovely. You may continue to play it.
Look, Marguerite. I have an income of 80,000 francs.
And I have 100. Did you see Prudence, Nanine?
Yes, madame. She is coming this evening.
Did anyone else call?
The doctor called on his way past to say it was particularly important that madame should rest.
Ah, that sweet doctor. Was that all?
The florist delivered a bouquet of roses and white lilac. It's very beautiful, but I kept it outside.
From me?
Put them in your room, Nanine.
Don't you want my flowers?
Now, Valville, what do they call me?
Marguerite Gautier.
No, no, my nickname.
Oh, the Lady of the Camellias.
And why? Because they are the only flowers I like, and you should know that by now. And anyway, I can't stand flowers with a perfume because of my illness. Your Marguerite really is an impossible character, Monsieur Dumas. You may believe you know how to write her, but I confess I do not know how to play her.
So far you are playing her very well, madame. A shade hard, perhaps. She is fickle, even difficult, but not hard.
My point precisely. After all, what is she? A little tart who uses men as she thinks fit, lives off them, discards them, and suddenly, poof, she's going to fall in love and you have her behave like a lady. I tell Buffet if I'm forced to play a tart, I'll play a tart. But I cannot play a tart with the sensibilities of a respectable woman. It's like trying to play a...
But, madame, Marguerite does have the sensibilities of a lady.
But she is a character in your play, my dear Dumas. You gave her this refinement of feeling. I say, such women do not behave in such ways.
And with every respect, madame, I say that Marguerite did so behave.
Monsieur, allow me to say it. You are still very young.
Madame, I am certainly young. But my play has been accepted by Monsieur Buffet. And having been accepted, we must rehearse it. Let us move on and take once more the first scene of intimacy between Marguerite and Armand Duval. Armand is there at the small party at Marguerite's for the first time. The others are in the drawing room, off stage, and Marguerite has returned to her boudoir. She is alone, trying to recover from her attack of breathlessness. The consumption is quite far advanced. This is a tender scene. Be tenderly played.
I'm afraid I find it sentimental.
I trust I know the difference between sentimentality and sentiment.
I trust I do, too.
Madame Doche, please. Scene 9, at the top of page 38. You are looking in the mirror.
Oh, very well. Oh, how pale I am. And I feel so weak.
Enter Armand, who has followed her to the boudoir. Monsieur Fechter, please.
How do you feel, madame?
You, monsieur. Thank you. I feel a little better. I am used to it, you know.
You are killing yourself. I would so like to be your friend, to stop you harming yourself in this way.
You wouldn't succeed, monsieur. But why do you look at me like that?
I love you.
Oh, yes. I had forgotten this great love you are said to have for me, and at a distance, too.
I fear you are laughing at me.
God forbid. It's what I hear every day, and it doesn't make me laugh anymore.
Be that as it may, my love at least deserves a promise from you.
What promise?
To take care of yourself.
But it is my feverish life which sustains me, you know. And as for caring for my health, that would be fine for a society lady with friends and relations. But as for us, once we're unable to provide pleasure and flatter someone's vanity, we are abandoned. I know it only too well, my friend. I was confined to my bed for 2 months, and after 3 weeks, no one came to see me. Oh, preposterous, Monsieur Dumas!
Preposterous, madame.
A dishonest attempt by the author to curry sympathy for his character. After 3 weeks, no one came to see me. Oh, dear.
Nevertheless, madame, it happened.
In your play. But then there are bad plays.
In my life, madame.
You claim you had a real-life Marguerite. A kept woman with the feelings of a lady.
Of a most sensitive and admirable lady. And I met her exactly as Armand meets her in my play, though I had seen her earlier at the theatre. Indeed, madame, in Acts 1 and 2 of the play, I have invented nothing. All is from life. All of it happened to me 4 years ago. Art, invention, only comes later, in Act 3.
And who, pray, was this remarkable creature?
Her name, madame, was Marie Duplessis.
She had arrived penniless in Paris from Normandy, and later blossomed into a truly wonderful creature.
Here, Dumas, the program.
Ah, and who's performing tonight?
Let's see. It's Bayard in a new sketch. They say it's quite amusing in its way. And let's see. Mademoiselle Estelle is singing. She'll accept a supper invitation at Tortoni's if one is so inclined. But she has skinny legs.
And her voice?
Thin like her legs.
There's no one interesting in the house. My dear Eugene, I can't imagine why you dragged me here.
Dumas, look over there, the front box.
It looks empty to me.
No, look through my glass, here. Can you see a figure in white in the shadows? I got a clear view of her just now. It's your Marie Duplessis.
Yes, I can see her now. I'm tormented by that girl. For nearly 2 years now, I've been watching her, and I'm absolutely besotted with her.
If it had been me, I'd have introduced myself long ago, taken her to bed, and got the poison out of my system. And if I were you, why, simplicity itself. Mademoiselle, allow me to introduce myself. Alexandre Dumas, poet, son of the great Alexandre Dumas, at your service. A girl like that could never resist it.
You really think so?
Of course, these kept creatures are all the same. They dearly love a prince, but they always find time for a poet. It brings an element of the spiritual into their lives, out of the bedroom and into the salon, you know.
But I think it's in the bedroom that I want to meet her.
I think tonight we'll see if we can't make this great conquest for you. I've just seen her friend Clémence in her box. An old madam who handles delicate matters for the Duplessis girl. I know her. I'll go and talk on your behalf.
Do you think that's a good idea? I mean...
Never mind what you mean. I understand these things. It won't be the first time I've negotiated this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'll be back in a minute.
So what did she say?
I gave Clémence your message for the Duplessis girls. Suitably wrapped up, of course. You know, worshipped from afar, 2 years. Respect and admiration of an ardent young man, soul of a poet. The great Dumas' son begs to pay his respects, so on and so forth.
And the answer, man, the answer.
Count Stackelberg will take her home in his carriage after the show and we may follow. If the Count goes in with her, we may leave our cards tomorrow, but... If senility dictates an early night and he leaves her at the door, then Monsieur Dumas and friend may go up.
My dear Eugène, what a friend you are.
I only hope this is the act of a friend and not an enemy.
Why an enemy?
Well, she may only be 20, but she's already very expensive. In meals and presents, money. They say her horses are the finest in Paris. Thoroughbreds from England. I'm told she eats like a bird, but off gold plate you couldn't even keep her in flowers.
It's very simple. I just don't have that sort of money. And anyway, I believe even girls of her type have affairs for love.
There are two things wrong with you, my dear Dumas. You're 18 and you've read too many of your father's romances. Perhaps the Duplessis girl would teach you about life as it is lived.
There she is. The carriage door is close behind her. The old man's going home. We're in luck. But I'm nervous, Eugène. I admit it.
Nothing to be nervous about, my dear fellow. Remember, you're a poet. Your father is the great Alexandre Dumas, and hers is a peasant from somewhere in Normandy. What is there to be nervous about?
I want to know at once, gentlemen, which of you are supposed to have waited beneath my window far into the night?
I am the guilty party, madame.
You must have seen some distinguished, even famous people.
When you were ill some months ago, I called every day to have news of you.
But no one told me.
I never left my name.
Oh, you should have done so.
I would not presume with a lady.
With us, you know, one does presume.
I do not think so.
Your friend has some strange ideas, Monsieur de Jazé. Perhaps he's only just arrived in Paris. Have you just arrived, Monsieur? Tell me about yourself.
My name is Alexandre Dumas, and I have not just arrived in Paris.
Dumas? I saw your father's beautiful play, Christine. Oh, I wept buckets.
I shall tell my father.
And you, Monsieur Dumas the Younger. What do you do when you are not beneath my windows?
I write poetry, madame.
A poet? I know Monsieur Théophile Gautier. Is he a good writer?
Yes, madame.
And you?
Not yet.
I am not properly educated, you know. Although I have learned to converse as if I was. But I would like to know more about poetry and what to read. Perhaps you would advise me.
It would give me great pleasure.
Beautiful young poet. Come, gentlemen. Let me introduce you to my friends. That really is enough of your piano playing, Count. This is my good friend, Nichette.
Monsieur?
And this is Gustave, who is mad about her.
I am indeed.
This is the Count de Mauriac. I do not know why he is here, though I dare say there's a reason, but never mind.
You are impossible, Marie.
I believe you know my friend Clémence. She lives next door. This is Eugène de Jazé and Alexandre Dumas, son of the famous Dumas. And a young man who apparently kept vigil beneath my window when I was ill. The others are in the next room, and you'll meet them later. Count, you may play once more.
Isn't she marvelous? That alabaster skin, so pale, and those almond eyes. Japanese. Did you ever see such a perfect bosom?
You're smitten, my poor friend. Beware.
Someone called her the most perfect creature in Paris. My God, they were right. How graceful she is. She's like a countess.
I warned you, she's very expensive.
My feelings have nothing to do with money.
But my dear fellow, she's a kept woman. She makes love for carriages and jewelry and all this splendid furniture. I wonder who slobbered over her in return for this delightful Cupid. Is it Houdon? Yes, I fancy it is.
I believe that sort of woman has feelings too. A creature who looks like that cannot be without a heart.
My dear friends, let us go into supper now. I shall dine entirely off champagne, but you may eat. Come, we shall... Oh, I'm short of breath. I'm so sorry, it's nothing. Excuse me, please. You must go in with that. Go, go. I shall just retire for a moment. I shall be all right. Oh, how pale I am. Oh, I feel so weak.
How do you feel, madame?
You, Monsieur Dumas. Oh, thank you. I feel a little better. I'm used to it, you know.
You are killing yourself. I would so like to be your friend, to stop you harming yourself in this way.
You wouldn't succeed, Monsieur. But why do you look at me like that?
I love you.
Ah, yes. I'd forgotten this great love you are said to have for me. And at a distance, too.
I fear you're laughing at me.
Oh, God forbid. It's what I hear every day. It doesn't make me laugh anymore.
Be that as it may, my love at least deserves a promise from you.
What promise?
To take care of yourself. Oh.
But if I looked after myself, my dear, I'd surely die. It is my feverish life which sustains me, you know. And as for caring for my health, that would be fine for a society lady with friends and relations. But as for us... Once we're unable to provide pleasure and flatter someone's vanity, we are abandoned. I know it only too well. I was confined to my bed for 2 months, and after 3 weeks, no one came to see me anymore.
I would like to look after you and make you better.
And you called every day, and you never sent in your card.
I suppose I was afraid of the influence you could have on my life.
That was wise, you know. After all... How long can anyone stand the company of someone like me, a woman who is nervy, ill, sad or gay, but with a gaiety which is sadder than sad, you know? I spend 100,000 francs a year, and I'm still short of money. That's all right for old moneybags like Stackelberg and Giray, but it would be quite impossible for a young man like you.
But if you decided to put this life behind
you... Oh, but who knows if I could ever keep resolutions like that. And anyway, you must not exaggerate what I'm worth. To tell you the truth, I'm not worth very much. But I can be a good friend, that I promise you. And perhaps that's what we should be.
You forget. I am in love with you.
Oh, my dear. I fear you would be leading us both into such trouble.
I am afraid your Marguerite is not a properly conceived character, Monsieur Dumas. You have invented dialogue which simply does not belong to a woman of her type. What she is and what you have her say are at odds.
I have invented very little, Madame Doche. I based my Marguerite Gautier on this girl from Normandy, Marie Duplessis. And I repeat, acts one and two are from life. Now I beg you to play Marguerite as I knew her.
But even in your play, you show her receiving money from her madam. You show her to be fickle, playing off barons against bankers.
I show her like that because that was how she was. We are all contradictory creatures, I think, madame.
You even have her dividing up her nights later between two men. The one who pays the bills and her Armand who provides her with the illusion that she is a woman of heart. I tell you, Fechter, you're playing a besotted fool.
Monsieur Fechter is playing me, madame.
If the cap fits, Monsieur Dumas, after all, you wrote the play.
Madame Doge is right, Dumas. You offer us a tart, and all credit to you, you don't pretend she's anything else. And later in the play, you show her making a supreme sacrifice. Giving up the man she's supposed to love because his father tells her their union would ruin his family. Then you have her die of consumption in his arms.
Correct.
Three lies, my dear fellow. She wouldn't have loved, she wouldn't have sacrificed, and the ending is pure sentimentality to make the audience wet their handkerchiefs in the approved manner.
And yet Monsieur Bouffet has accepted the play, so I'm afraid we must proceed.
Yes.
May we return to the boudoir scene at the top of page 34? Monsieur Fechter, a touch of anger here.
Anger.
Armand is a young man of spirit. If you send me away, I shall go. Now, please.
Oh, very well.
If you send me away, I shall go.
If you knew how many men have said as much and not gone.
You're right, I am mad. Laugh at me as much as you like. It's the best thing you could do. Goodbye.
Armand.
Are you calling me back?
I don't want you to leave angry. Shake hands. Come and see me often. We'll talk and laugh together.
That's both too much and too little.
But if I believe what you say so quickly, you'll say of me what everyone says. But what does it matter? I have less time to live than others, and so I must live faster. I think you mean what you say. So take this flower. It's a camellia.
What am I to do with it?
You are to bring it back to me when it has faded.
How long will it take?
What it takes any flower. The space of an evening. Or a morning.
You make me so happy.
So tell me you love me.
I love you.
And now, go.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Armand leaves. Marguerite rejoins her guests, and the curtain comes down on Act One. Now, Act Two, please. Marguerite with her friend Prudence and the maid Nanine. Madame Doche, please.
Good evening, my dear Prudence. Have you seen the Count?
Yes, I saw him for you.
Did he give you the money?
Yes, here it is. Could you lend me 300 or 400 francs?
Take what you need. Ah. Did you tell the Count I intend to go to the country for a while?
Yes.
And what did he say?
That you were quite right, and it could only do you good.
I visited the house again today, you know. Ah. It's such a beautiful spot just by the river. And there are flowers in the garden, Prudence. Lots of flowers.
And the rent?
It's expensive. 2,000 francs for the season.
All this is what I'd call love, my dear.
And it frightens me, Prudence. Perhaps it's a case of sudden passion. Or maybe a caprice such as I've had before, you know. All I'm sure of is that something has happened to me.
Did your young lover come to see you yesterday?
Yes. And he'll be here again this evening. If only you knew how kind he is, Prudence.
Oh, what a pity men like that never have 100,000 a year.
On the contrary, how lucky they are. At least they know they're loved for themselves.
I shall pray for you, Marguerite.
Why?
Because, my dear, you are in mortal danger.
Maybe. And what can be nicer than living dangerously?
Why are you laughing at me?
I'm laughing at myself.
Let me share the joke.
I spend my life laughing at other people's stupid remarks, you know. Now I'm tasting real laughter. I'm happy. You make me happy. No. Now get your hands off me. It's nearly 5 and you have to go. Remember our agreement. You leave at 5 before it is light. So, get dressed quickly and go.
I want to stay.
I want you to stay. But I told you, you must go at 5. No, my dear, you must not touch me anymore. My willpower does not extend so very far.
When can I come back? Tonight?
Come here at 4, and we will take a little walk in the Bois. I hope to have some good news for you.
What news?
I can't tell you now.
Tell me.
Leave me alone. That won't make me talk. But I will remind you of what you said. You want to look after me? You want me to live quietly for a while, to regain my health? Do you still want to do that?
Of course. Of course I do.
Then I repeat, I may have some good news for you at 4. Now, out of my bed. Out. Out?
I'm going.
Oh, here. Take this. It's a key to the apartment. No one else has one. But you must promise only to use it when I tell you to come.
I promise.
Good. Now, dress quickly. And off with you.
There. Please wrap your coat around you. You must not catch cold.
Oh, thank you. I'm always frozen, you know.
So what is this good news of yours?
First, the facts. They are painful. The way I live costs me 100,000 francs a year. It's no use arguing about that. Before, I had nothing. Now, I earn, if you like, 100,000, and I cannot live on less. But at present, I have debts of 20,000. Problem. How to get away for a rest in the country with you without my possessions being seized, which means that my debts must be paid.
I simply haven't got...
Oh, and even if you had, I wouldn't take it. No, I have a scheme, you see, and it has worked perfectly. Always assuming that you would like to spend the summer in the country with me.
What a question. In my wildest dreams,
Hi, young Dumas. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Count.
I ran into your father at Tortoni's last week. Tells him you're writing poetry these days.
That is so.
Charming, yeah.
May I present Count de Bray, Mademoiselle Duplessis?
I have met Mademoiselle.
I believe so.
Count, excuse me. Your hat.
Yeah?
You will forgive me. You have not removed your hat. I am with a lady.
I haven't seen a lady, my dear young fellow.
That is unforgivable. You will hear from me, sir.
My dear. The Count is quite right not to remove his hat, since he has so little hair, while you have so much. Only a mannerless boor or a bald person in mortal fear of catching cold would keep his hat on, even with me. You are not a mannerless boor, are you, Count?
I am as much of a boor as you are a lady, my dear.
Sir.
Beware, Dumas. You cannot afford such witty conversation. It comes very expensive.
I once had the occasion to receive the Count, you know. It may be that he blames me for his failure to rise to the occasion, despite what they say about bald men.
You see, young Dumas, and you wanted me to remove my hat. I bid you good day, young man, and I advise you to stick to composing verse.
You see, my dear, you see what you have wandered into, and you say you love me.
Everyone knows Debray is a pig.
A pig, maybe, but he knows who his grandfather was, and I barely know my own father. That is the difference.
Is it true that you...
Did I bestow what you men call my favors on the Count? Yes. Once I did. I can't say that he was able to accept the gift, but yes, yes, I did. And I can tell from your expression that you are not at all pleased.
How can you expect me to be pleased?
Oh, but my dear, dear friend, I am what I am. I have had many men. Do you think one advances from a garret and a crust with dripping to odio silver and foie gras from Potel without there being people like Count Debray along the way? I warned you the other evening at the apartment that we should just shake hands and be good friends, but you refused. Now, I am falling in love with you. But I cannot wipe out my past. All my 20,000 francs of debts.
So what is this scheme of yours?
Well, I won't tell you until you take that sulky look off your face.
There. Is that better?
A little better. And now, a smile, please.
There.
Good. And don't go challenging men like Count Debray on my behalf, or you'll be fighting duels twice a week.
Scheme, though.
Yes, yes, my scheme. You know about my relationship with Count Stackelberg. What you cannot know, however, is that all the old man asks of me is my company.
It is difficult to believe.
Well, he is past 80, and alone in the world. And in any case, what he sees in me is a memory of his own daughter. She died of the same disease of the lungs that I have. There are many old men who will spend a great deal of money just for the company of an attractive young woman. At all events, he pays over half my expenses, and he alone continued to send me money when I was ill.
And he is part of your scheme for the country?
Yes. I told him I have a chance to get well by spending the summer in a little house on the Marne, but that my creditors have to be paid off and the summer rental must be paid.
And what did he say?
He says he will pay. And so we can go together on our country idyll, just you and me, alone by the river, among the trees, you looking after me, covering my knees when the wind is cool, fetching my chocolate, popping sweets into my mouth, loving me.
I can't do it.
You can't?
Not on those terms. Not with his money.
But would you have been happier if I'd asked you for the money to pay my debts?
I haven't got it.
Well, then where's the problem, my dear friend? The Count has it, and he is willing to give it. In return, all he gets is my absence. And you climb onto a pedestal, strike a heroic pose, and say, no, my pride forbids. Oh, really?
I'm sorry. I can't bear the thought of living with you off the Count's money.
Look, you said you wanted to look after me. You know that in Paris I can't resist the theatres and late nights. So if I'm to get well, it must be in the country. I'm willing to give up all this for 3 or 4 months to be with you. Perhaps I could give it up altogether. But you can't afford it. The Count can, and you say no. So, tell me what your own plan is.
I have no plan.
Listen, my dear friend. When a woman like me takes a true lover, an affair of the heart, he has to fit in with her way of life. He has to be available, obedient, and above all, he must not be jealous. He enters a scheme of things he cannot like. He must not ask questions. It is not the most pleasant thing in the world. Can you do it?
I suppose I must try.
Good. So let's pick up my carriage and return to town.
I suddenly feel very cold.
And this evening?
Oh, I'm tired today. You made me tired. You know perfectly well that I didn't sleep. I must go to bed early. I will be asleep by 8. So, come to me tomorrow at 1. I will offer you a breast of chicken and a glass of champagne. Come, help me to my carriage. And remember, I love you.
I do not feel really well, she said. I feel very cold. I dined alone that evening, and by 10 I felt I had to know how she was. I did not admit that I simply wanted to be sure that she had told me the truth. And so, at 10, I went to the Rue Dantin. A light was on. I went up and rang. Her maid answered. Madame is out, she said. She'd gone out with friends at 7:30, and no, she didn't know when she'd be back. I wandered along the boulevards. I searched the foyers of the theatres. I looked in the restaurants. Every man must know what I was feeling, but I suppose not many have rushed around town like madmen in search of further torment. At 2 in the morning, I was back in the Rue Dantin. At 2:30, she returned with a man. I think it was Monsieur de Meaux. She went in. He followed her. I waited an hour, and he did not come out. The light went out. I went home and wept into my pillow. And instead of going to her at 1 that day, I sent my servant with a letter. My dear Marie, I hope you were not feeling too unwell yesterday evening. I came round at 10 to see how you were, and I was told you had gone out after all. I was naturally disappointed, but it appears that someone, was it Monsieur de Meaux, was luckier than I, because he brought you home later, and I did not see him leave. I love you, but I cannot love you on the terms you appear to have laid down. And so, I am returning the key to your apartment, which will no doubt be useful if you are often as ill as you were last night. Farewell.
Now, where do we resume?
Act 2, scene 11, please. Marguerite and her friend Prudence. Ladies!
You know Armand is in my apartment across the way.
Should that interest me, my dear Prudence?
He wants to talk to you.
And I don't want him here. In any case, Monsieur de Giray is waiting for me downstairs. You may tell him as much.
Heavens, Marguerite, are you asking for a duel?
That man will make me unhappy.
So don't see him again, my dear. Leave things as they are.
What did he say to you?
So you do want him here. I'll go and fetch him. But what about Monsieur de Giray downstairs?
Monsieur de Giray will wait.
It might be best to send him away.
You're right. When you fetch Armand, tell the maid to go down and tell Monsieur de Giray that I'm unwell. Now go quickly. Oh, my God, Dumas. Your Marguerite is an impossible trollop. Do you mean to say that was from the life, too?
I'm afraid it was, madame.
And you kept coming back like a schoolboy with his first infatuation.
You're playing the part. I feel like one of those dogs who keeps returning to his mistress after every beating.
Maybe I kept coming back because, schoolboy or not, I understood one thing. Not only did I love her,
I knew that she loved me.
A pretty way of showing it, don't you think, Fechter?
That sort of woman is always the same. Business before pleasure, affairs of the pocket before affairs of the heart.
I could not see it at the time, but I can see now that once she'd been caught up in that world, she had no choice. It was either a case of leaving it completely or following its rules. It is a different morality. That's all.
Monsieur Dumas, I'm afraid you speak like your father's son.
I do not understand, madame.
I mean that the irregular circumstances of your own birth have had that effect on your outlook. Oh, you will forgive my mentioning a fact that your father has done nothing to hide.
It is perfectly true that my father only recognized me as his son a short while ago. But I hope, madame, that you had a mother as devoted and selfless as mine. Alone in the world with a son whose paternity the law did not recognize, she worked hard to educate me. And I am proud to say that what I know of morality, I learned from her. What you call the circumstances of my birth have taught me that society creates stereotypes. The fallen woman, of course, is a favorite. Well, I have known duchesses who are not fit to serve my mother's tea. You can say that my play is a protest against a stereotype. Now, can we please resume?
What do you want?
I want you to forgive me.
You do not deserve it. I can understand your being jealous, and that you should write me an ill-tempered letter, but not a sarcastic and impertinent one. You have made me unhappy.
And you, Marie? Did you not make me unhappy? Remember, I may only have known you for 4 days, but I've been in love with you for 2 years.
I think we should not see each other again.
Why?
Not only for your sake, but also for mine.
But I thought you loved me.
Yes. I believe I loved you.
So?
It is a luxury that in my precarious financial state I simply cannot afford.
You should not have told me you were ill and then gone with another man.
I'm afraid you speak like a young bourgeois who can afford to pick and choose, whereas with 20,000 francs of debts and 100,000 francs a year of expenses, I have very little room for choice. Look, my dear friend, I am young. I am beautiful. You were fond of me. I'm a good sort. Oh, yes, I am a good sort, you know. You should have taken what was good in me and left the rest. But it seems that you could not manage to do it.
But you wanted to get away from all this and spend the summer with me in the country.
Yes, I'd said to myself, a rest might restore my health, and he takes such a sweet interest in me. If I could only find a way to spend a quiet summer with him, who knows, I might live to see my 25th birthday.
You mustn't talk like that.
Oh, I'm not one for illusions, you know. Neither about my health, nor about what is and isn't possible for someone like me. You know, there are times when women like us have absurd dreams, in which we do not have to laugh with Monsieur de Giray at 2 a.m, when all we want to do is to sleep. I found you, and I confess, in 4 short days, I built a whole future around you. But I built it on a dream, and it cannot work. I have feelings and desires that I cannot control, and so do you. And you, my poor Dumas, cannot accept me for what I am.
And do you imagine for one moment that after hearing what you said, I would simply just walk out of here? Just because you asked me to?
So, you'll come to the country with me?
So, help me, I will.
For a man who's about to leave Paris with the most beautiful woman in the city, you look uncommonly glum. What is the matter with you?
Tell me, Eugene. Do you think I'm mad? I find I am deliriously happy and utterly miserable by turns and at once. I suppose you think I'm mad.
I don't think you're mad, my dear fellow. It's quite simple, really. You're nibbling the most delicious apple on the tree of knowledge, or wherever these apples are supposed to grow. And there's a maggot in that apple. There always is, you know, in the best of the fruit. The apple's delicious, but the maggot turns your stomach. That's my lesson in botany or cookery or whatever it is for this evening.
You think I'm ridiculous? I suppose I am. Eugène, she is driving me mad. Listen, she sends me notes, summoning me. And when I get there, the maid tells me she has gone out. Mm. She grants me audiences. Come to my box in the theatre this evening between the second and third acts. Mm-hmm. And when I get there, she sends me out to buy her favourite sweets. I get back, and there's a baron and a couple of minor counts in her box. I feel like an errand boy. Do you know what these sweets are supposed to cost? My God, I've no idea you could ruin yourself in a sweet shop.
Does any of that surprise you?
The real trouble is that when I bring her the sweets, she takes them without even looking at me. Then, an hour later, I get another note. This time, a real assignation. That night, in that lace-trimmed bedroom of hers, I can't tell you what she's like, Eugène. You cannot imagine. And then, I know that in her own utterly impossible way, she loves me as I love her. So help me, I believe it.
These women don't love my poor Juma.
I tell you, she does. And the proof is that we shall spend 3 whole months together, and I have nothing to offer but myself. Not a jewel, not a piece of silver, not a fur cape, nothing.
You told me the old count is paying. How does that particular shoe fit, eh? Pinch a little at the toe, does it? Make you limp a bit?
I feel like a gigolo, a cat lover. She says I've read too much literature. It has made me sentimental about practical matters like money.
Ah, there speaks the peasant. And of course, she's not faithful to you.
Do you know what she says? With that slow smile which simply melts my heart. I'm not being unfaithful to you with Monsieur So-and-so, she says. I'm being unfaithful to So-and-so with you.
And what do you say?
How can you say anything when a woman's mouth is on you?
Just tell me, where is she tonight?
I've no idea. But she said she'd meet me here at midnight.
It's 5:30.
She's always late.
How long will you wait?
Until she comes.
Oh, my poor Dumas.
But as you said, tomorrow I go to the country with the most beautiful creature in Paris. Who wouldn't wait?
Now, let me tell you what I did on this auspicious... Do you say auspicious day?
Tell us then. And you can surely call it auspicious, since tomorrow we leave Paris.
Beastly, depraved, dangerous Paris. Oh, how wonderful. Well, this morning, I had my piano lesson and started work on a charming Berceuse by Mr. Field.
No, your friend Franz Liszt will be jealous.
Oh, his music's too difficult. He told me I play with my feet. So I told him his music is only fit for contortionists. Anyway. Then I spent a little time putting my affairs in order so that my bed won't be seized by the bailiffs while I'm away. Where would I be without my bed, Dumas?
Am I supposed to laugh?
Oh, he's so grumpy and jealous. The tiniest joke and it's sulking time. Now, come on, smile. I order you. Smile. No, more. There, that's better.
I'm sorry. What did you do next?
I lunched off angel food and nectar. Mm. Then I went for a drive in the bois.
My dear Marie, how very delightful to see you, my dear.
Monsieur Ducasse, do you know my friends, Dumas and de José?
Of course. Now, I take it you'll all be at the ball at the Variété tomorrow night.
Oh.
Fancy dress, theme, the age of chivalry. Masks will be worn.
Oh, yes, what fun. We'll be there, won't we, Dumas?
No, we won't be there. To be precise, we shall be 65 kilometers away on the banks of the Marne.
Oh, but we can't miss the ball. I have a splendid domino I haven't worn yet.
But aren't we going away tomorrow?
Well, why can't we go the next day? The house won't fall down.
Oh, come on, Dumas. The lady wants to go to the ball.
And my new domino.
But we've arranged to go away tomorrow, Ducasse.
And I've decided to leave the following day.
And what if we meet Ducasse again and he offers you another ball? Or a new show at the Lyrique? Or maybe a party the day after.
Then I'll say yes, if it pleases me, and we'll go one day later.
My dear Marie, you are in danger of losing your summer idyll altogether.
Oh, it's too bad. Why can't one do what one wants to do?
Let me introduce my friend Dumas. He is the man with whom you were to leave Paris tomorrow. Remember?
But he must come to the ball, too. Of course you must, you poor unhappy man.
Of course he'll come, Dumas.
I am due to leave Paris. I am tired of fancy dress balls. I have no costume. The answer, therefore, is no, Decasse. I will not come.
But I, on the other hand, will be there. And if you won't take me, no doubt someone else will.
I offer my arm, mademoiselle.
Why not?
I forbid it.
You what?
I forbid it.
How can you forbid it? You do not own me. I see no ball and chain. Where is my ball and chain? Here? Oh, no, no, no ball and chain.
I cannot stand any more of this infantile nonsense. Like a spoiled child who wants every bauble it sees in the shop windows. One cannot have every bauble.
I can, I do.
Forgive me, but I must go. Eugène, be a good fellow and see Marie home. Mademoiselle, Eugène, Decasse, I bid you good night.
Oh, poor Dumas. We must teach him fantasy, spontaneity, maybe even irresponsibility.
And so, another quarrel. That made two within the week. Mary went to her ball. I stayed at home and paced up and down half the night like a lunatic. She was a spoiled child, no doubt. And like a spoiled child, once she had what she wanted so desperately, why, she immediately wanted something else. How could one love such a wayward, impossible creature? I do not know. I can only say that her elusive, fickle, restless heart had been touched, that I'd got past the surface mockery, the hollow laughter and easy vice, to the girl herself. And any man who had understood that, as she lay panting in his arms, and had believed it as I believed it, such a man must love her, and continue to love her. And it had nothing to do with common sense. And I was only 18.
You were angry with me. You did not come to the ball. A pity. It was very gay.
I'm glad.
You're still angry with me. Oh, I can't play the rest. Are we always going to quarrel like this?
I have no desire to quarrel with you.
And yet you're the one who's grumpy. Look at me, smiling, full of love for you.
You don't act as if you were.
You want me to be someone different, someone proper, orderly, reliable. I can't. I try, but I can't.
But, my dear Marie, you will surely kill yourself like this. It's what I want to take you away from. It's what you yourself say will be the death of you. Look, today we should be side by side before a log fire in a cozy house in the woods, instead of which we are still in the heart of Paris, and I have no idea whether you'll finally come away tomorrow or not.
I will.
Do you promise?
Come here.
You're trying to evade the issue again. Do you promise?
I said, come here. Here. Close to me. That's right. Now listen to me, you grumpy, jealous man with a beautiful smile which I hardly ever see.
But Marie...
Listen to me. Tomorrow, I swear we go away together. I'm sorry about the ball, and I confess it wasn't that much fun after all. I don't know why I wanted to go so much. I have these urges to do things which I know aren't good for me. It's as if I was hastening to meet beastly old Death halfway, since I know he's set out to find me.
You mustn't say such things.
Oh, yes, I can. I've told you before, I'm a realist, and I know people with my illness, people like me, do not live for very long. I told you. I have to live faster than others. That's why I accepted you so quickly, why I never argued with my heart.
You have to learn to choose what things should be done in a hurry and what shouldn't be done at all.
I am a poor judge, and you will help me.
So we really go tomorrow?
Today I will rest, and tomorrow you will fetch me here at 10.
We rarely go tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention? Would you gather round, please? I have an important announcement. Monsieur Bouffet has heard from the minister. Our play has been granted a license at last. We'll open it exactly 3 weeks from now. We still have work to do, ladies and gentlemen. A great deal of work.
No amount of work will make a play of it.
I'm afraid not, but I suppose we must do our best, eh?
Madame Doge.
Monsieur Fechter, monsieur.
I'm not happy about the way the third act is going. Perhaps we could talk about it.
I fear talking won't rewrite the act.
I am not contemplating rewriting anything, madame. What I had in mind was that you might play it rather differently.
What does that mean?
Let us consider for a moment what is happening between these two people. They have retired to the country. It is a love-idyll. They live simply. Her health improves. All this is established in the first scenes of our third act, is it not?
It is.
Then we see her secretly selling her possessions in order to pay the bills and continue her life with Armand.
A piece of disinterested intrigue which it is difficult to believe in.
Then Armand's father arrives, asks her for the supreme sacrifice. Give him up by pretending she does not love him. Heartbroken, and for love of him, she agrees. It is a scene which needs to be played with great dignity and feeling, madame.
I play it as I feel it.
Perhaps you could manage to feel it rather more. After all, this girl is in love. In a real sense, her very life depends on it. And now she gives up her future, her life even, for the sake of Armand and his family. The flippancy, the smart Parisian style, all this must fall away, I think.
People do not change between scene 5 and scene 6 of a play.
Perhaps you had imposed upon Marguerite a character which was too inflexible, lacking in depth.
Monsieur Dumas, you are impertinent.
Madame, you show a lack of charity towards the character which I feel is unworthy of you.
You provide no grounds in the text for asserting that your Marguerite would make any such sacrifice.
Madame, I knew her. We were in love. She was not called upon to do what I have Marguerite do in my play, but I tell you, it is not out of character.
So what happened to the two of you, Dumas? Did you actually go to the country with the Duplessis girl?
I did.
And how long did that last?
We were out of Paris together for 2 months. And at first, it was a perfect summer.
You know, it's a strange thing.
What is strange?
Well, the sky is a wonderful blue, is it not?
Yes.
And the cherry tree is beautiful.
Certainly. It's beautiful.
And if you look carefully, you can see little birds everywhere.
You can. You can.
And yet, you don't look carefully. You don't look at the sky, the trees, or flowers. And as for the birds, you wouldn't know they were there if I hadn't told you. All you look at is me.
You're the most beautiful sight in the whole valley of the Marne.
You are foolish.
I'm happy in my foolishness. Mm.
All this reminds me of when I was a child in Normandy. We kept ducks, you know. Have you ever noticed how very amiable ducks look?
I haven't. No.
And how bored most cows are.
No.
They have the same expression as the Duchess of Ragusa. She looks at me just like a cow.
I've noticed something else.
What is it?
You haven't coughed today.
I only coughed twice yesterday.
It shows you how necessary it was to get away from Paris.
Mm. It's the early nights.
The fresh air.
It's being loved. And those nights aren't early.
If loving you could restore your health, you are certainly cured.
I think it can, you know.
And you're not bored?
I'm not bored. Oh, by the way, there was a letter this morning from that crazy man de Mauriac. He wants to visit us on Sunday with a crowd of friends.
You don't want that, do you? He's a fool.
Oh, why not? It might be fun.
I'd prefer to have you to myself on Sunday.
Oh, you're just an old hermit. Why not have a little fun with friends for once? We haven't seen a soul from Paris since we've been here.
That was the idea, you know.
Well, I'd like to see some of my friends. We'll give them a picnic lunch. Perhaps we could get Potel to send something really nice from Paris. And we must get in some champagne. You must find a piano tuner in the village so that de Mauriac can play for us, and then we can dance.
Do you really want all
that? Oh, yes, of course I do. Oh, it will be lovely. We'll find a couple of girls in the village to help with the service. I'll write to de Mauriac right away and to Clemence. She can arrange everything with Potel. We'll have some quails and aspic and caviar and...
Now that's enough! This rustic instrument doesn't do justice to my art. It's for peasants, an agricultural instrument.
Oh, come on, Cab, play something really wild and wicked.
Well, how can I do that when my glass is empty?
Wine for the maestro. Here, Cab, champagne. Ah. Now, let us have something inspired.
I play on one condition.
Ah, the player is getting above himself, everyone. He's laying down conditions.
I'll play if Marie will give us a solo.
Oh, yes.
You've danced too much already.
Oh, don't be a stuffy old hermit.
You see what I mean?
It's nothing. It's the heat in here, that's all.
Come on, Marie, we've all come a long way to see you. You can't disappoint us.
You always dance so beautifully. Goat, I command you, play the polka again. Gustave, come and dance with me, since my Dumas most certainly won't.
Marie. That night she coughed blood again. Then she swore she would obey me in future, called me her spiritual doctor, her savior. She wept, and so did I. And that was when I knew I could never save her from herself. And I understood that this girl, with her whims and childish pleasures, was capable of making me more unhappy than I had thought anyone could ever be. What was I to do?
Bother. It's too hard. What shall we do?
What? Oh, I'm sorry, I was reading. You don't want to read?
I've reached a dull bit.
Or play the piano?
A dull bit there too. And listen to the rain. It's been like that for nearly a week now.
My poor restless bird of paradise, trapped in a cage by the weather. What shall we do with her?
You wouldn't like to go on just a very, very short trip to Paris, for instance? Just a short one?
No.
Oh, but I don't think I can stand it much longer here. I read, I crochet, I play the piano, we talk, look out at the rain. Oh, God, the rain. Oh, yes. And we play backgammon, the big event of our day. Oh.
You're unhappy with me.
Let's say I'm not happy, but I swear it isn't because I'm with you.
For me, being with you is enough.
For me, being with you is not enough. I'm sorry.
My poor, unhappy Mary. What are we to do?
Go back to Paris. Oh, don't tell me it will kill me. Wrestling with this wretched waltz, that will most certainly kill me. I'll fall down dead in the next bar from sheer frustration on, what is it, a B-flat.
If we return to Paris, I shall lose you.
Oh, nonsense. We can go on just as we were before.
We can't. It was hell.
Oh, yes, we can. Why not? I'll want you with me as often as possible, every day. There. We'll meet every day. And we'll sleep together, well, nearly every night, because I love it so.
My poor Mary. You are incorrigible.
I'm bored. I must go back to Paris. You must come with me, and I will be wicked. I'll be unfaithful to all my lovers, and always with you.
Could any man wish for a greater honor than that? The whole of Paris cuckolded by you.
Could any man wish for a darker hell?
I told you, if you love me, you must fit in my life. I am a prisoner in it, and you must become a prisoner too. How can you love me from the other side of the bars? Oh, please. Just a little bit of Paris.
And your health?
I'm better.
You coughed blood again when de Mauriac and the others came.
I promise not to. Ever again. No more blood. I promise.
Marie, you will drive me mad.
I've told you. My illness makes me so restless. I know it makes me hard to live with. And yet I have this great yearning, this agony to be loved as you love me. And here I am making it impossible for you.
You are.
I'm sorry. I am truly sorry. But try to understand. I have to compress a childhood I never had and a future I won't have either into these few years. How can you ask me not to dance when I love to dance and not to drink champagne when I love it? Oh, we both do a lot of pretending about cures and a long, peaceful life together. But I know better. Even if I live, my beauty will fade. You'll begin to find me boring, and then you'll blame me for marrying you. And by the time you leave me, and you will leave me, Dumas, I'll be too old to go back to my former life. Why, Paris is full of women who fell into that trap, you know. I don't think I could bear it.
And so we returned to Paris. We had had 8 weeks together in the country. I suppose it had been 3/4 the purest bliss, and 1/4 agony. In Paris, we returned to the old routine. Assignations, summonses to this or that theatre, promises kept and broken, a kind of sordid hide-and-seek with her lovers, scribbled notes, always notes, in that childish hand. And she was coughing again. Her pallor, which had been a part of her beauty, was becoming a sign of her decay. The almond eyes seemed to grow and to eat up her face, as we say. And her perfect body was wasting away. She used her chiffons and frills to hide her thinness, but in bed, the bones showed. The terrible disease was consuming her. And as it did so, the frenzy of her life intensified. Her doctors called daily, but the purges and medicines did her no good.
My dearest, I cannot see you at the theatre after all, but come to Tortoni's at midnight. If my plans go right, we shall be able to go home together. If not, you will surely forgive me. Because you love me, Marie. I am sorry about last night. I was coughing badly, went to bed, never reached Tortoni's. So I was a good girl after all, wasn't I? Come to me at 8. I love you. Marie.
I went at 8. She hadn't the strength to cross the room to me. The doctors had forbidden her to leave the apartment, but she admitted she had lunched in town. She ate no supper, just drank a little hot chocolate and lay on her divan, holding my hand and weeping. Her wonderful sexuality was draining away as life itself drained from her body. I found it difficult to kiss her lips when I left. And when I got home, I found an urgent note begging me to call on Clémence.
I've asked you to come because we must do something for Marie.
You know very well that I've tried, Clémence.
Usually she'll listen to me, but a devil seems to have got into her. It's a kind of frenzy, as if she's squeezing every last adventure into her life before it ends.
Once she said to me,
You see me as a disreputable person, but you know I was a child once. It's what I'd like to be again.
You're the only one who can save her.
But I don't believe she loves me anymore. When I'm with her, she's bored and irritable. And she finds more and more excuses to cancel our arrangements. But she doesn't deny herself to the others.
She needs money. She has debts again.
In that absent-minded, innocent way of hers, she is tearing me to pieces.
Won't you try a little longer?
I don't think I can.
Poor soul. She's never known a man like you. Never in her life. He is so kind, she says. So kind to me.
And so, soon afterwards, I wrote to her. We had dined together that night, and she had been very sweet, very tender. She asked me to stay afterwards, and I said no. I was tired and must sleep. Sleep here, she said. I'll let you sleep, I promise. I refused. If I had stayed, I would never have written the letter. Her health had started to improve again. She was still pale and weak, but the crisis had passed, as they do with this illness. I went home and wrote to her. My dear Mary, I am neither rich enough to love you as I would wish, nor poor enough to love you as you demand. No, as you desire. Let us both forget, then, you a name which must be a matter of indifference to you. I, a happiness which has become impossible for me. It is pointless to tell you how sad I am, since you already know how much I love you. Farewell, then. You have too much heart not to understand the reason for my letter, and too much intelligence not to forgive me for it. 1,000 memories. A.D. I sent my servant with it. She had too much dignity and self-respect to send a reply. Or perhaps she simply didn't care.
So, you haven't seen her lately?
Not for 3 months. I caught sight of her the other day on the boulevard. She was in her carriage, you know, erect, composed, perfect in white fur, with a little fur hat. And that trace of a smile on her lips.
She saw you?
I think so. I can't be sure. But she didn't acknowledge me. Oh, Eugène, it broke my heart to see her.
And you'll not return to her?
I dare not.
No, you haven't the temperament for it, that's all.
I'm going to Spain with my father and some friends.
Good, it will get her out of your system.
At present, I feel that nothing ever can.
Oh, ridiculous. You must say to yourself, Alexander, you have had a passionate affair with the most desirable woman in Paris, and therefore the whole of Europe. Barons and millionaires have paid small fortunes for what you had free, willingly, maybe lovingly given. And that's that. It will give you a very nice chapter in your memoirs, maybe a poem or two. Something to tell the little ones as they cluster round your knees in your old age. She was your Helen of Troy, your Cleopatra. Oh, I wish it had happened to me.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. The dress rehearsal went well, and now we must pray for a sympathetic audience tomorrow night. May I ask for more pace in Act 4 in the gambling scene? Let us have it brittle. Dangerous and brittle. The last act was beautifully done. Madame Doche, Monsieur Fechter, I'm grateful to you. When Marguerite dies, just a shade more hesitation, Monsieur Fechter, before it dawns on you. And then that terrible cry.
And can we have that curtain down faster on the sheds? Much will be forgiven. Thank you, everyone. And good night.
Monsieur Dumas, it has been a long, hard piece of work.
Indeed it has, madame.
You know I have not been happy.
I can only express my regret, madame, and my thanks.
I confess I do not like your play, but I admire your courage.
Courage?
Certainly. We risk a major scandal tomorrow night. It'll be a question whether the Paris audience will see your Marguerite as I see her, or as you do. A gamble, Monsieur Dumas, it takes courage.
If they agree with you, I fear they will shout us off the stage. I apologize in advance.
I will do my best to convince them that your Marguerite was a good woman at heart. Like that, they will weep instead. After all, who will ever know which of us is right?
I'd been away from Paris for 3 months. In Marseille, I received Eugène's letter telling me that Marie was dead. She had died on the 3rd of February, he said. He didn't know who was with her when she died, or how things were. I got back to Paris on the 10th. 7 days too late to see her. Maybe to comfort her. But I was in time for the auction of her possessions in the apartment where she'd spent her last days.
Ah, Gautier, my dear fellow. All this is quite extraordinary. No doubt you'll devote your column to it tomorrow.
I shall.
So shall I.
The whole of fashionable Paris is here, with its elbows in our ribs. Excuse me, madame.
These fine ladies would never have been seen talking to the poor soul when she was alive.
Well, now they're here to examine her underwear and cutlery.
I believe you knew her, eh?
Well, she liked the company of writers and musicians. She was a girl of sensibility. She was educating herself.
You came here to her apartment?
Often. And she died alone here, you know, in that room, in fact, with only her maid to hold her hand. It's a short story, my dear fellow, a novelette. She was 23.
And who gets the proceeds of all this? There must be a fortune in silver and furniture here.
No, she was in debt. You can see the bailiffs at the door. But they've unearthed a sister from some Normandy village, peasant. No doubt she'll get what's left.
So, fashionable Paris comes to examine the wages of sin, to see if it pays after all.
Exactly so.
Oh. I'd say sin is a very good line of business.
Number 63. Here, hold it up, boy. Higher, there. Number 63 in your catalogue. An ormolu mounted clock decorated with porcelain flowers, signed Guillaume on the dial. Exquisite quality. One of the period of Louis XV, and formerly the property of a noble lady of the court. Now, what am I bid for this fine piece? 300 francs, Monsieur Joubert, thank you. I'm bid 300, 20, 40, 60, 400. 400, Monsieur Max, thank you. For 20, 40, 60, 60, and I bid more. Madame, you come, sir. 460, the bargain, ladies and gentlemen. 460 francs to Monsieur Joubert, thank you. And now lot number 64. A set of six Meissen dishes of 1758 with how smaller decoration.
I find the overall effect vulgar, of course. Everything too perfect.
And there are some very pretty things.
Oh, did you notice? The Duchess of Ragusa bought two lots of jewellery.
Probably part of her family's collection that her nephew had given the girl. He was mad about her. She's here to get it back.
Oh, were they nice pieces?
Very nice pieces, in perfect taste.
Look, look, over there. That splendid-looking young man with the great head of hair. Do you see?
Yes, who is he?
The natural son of Alexandre Dumas.
He bid for some of her papers.
Did he get them?
I think so.
And a rather charming necklace. Modest piece.
Mm, very handsome young man. Perhaps he knew her. Oh,
they say he was her house-trained poet.
I bought a necklace of hers as a keepsake and a small parcel of her private papers. A note from Clémence asking for the loan of 200 francs. A receipt for 24 pairs of fine kid gloves. 24! And among these bits and pieces, my letter, ending our affair. She'd kept it among her bills, and they were selling it at auction. I am neither rich enough to love you as I would wish, nor poor enough to be loved as you desire. Yes. Yes. Farewell, then. You have too much heart not to understand the reason for my letter, and too much intelligence not to forgive me for it. 1,000 memories. A.D. I suppose if I'd not sent that letter and gone away, I might have held her hand when she died. Or she might not have died at all. They told me that at the end she was coughing up dark blood, gasping for breath, drowning, they said. Lying there, in our bed, drained of strength and drowning. That lovely creature. But no longer lovely. And she was 23. I asked Gautier how things were at her funeral.
The Madeleine was lavishly draped for a funeral of the first category, with the initial D in white on the hangings over the door. Very smart.
Who paid for all that?
They were left over from the previous ceremony for an ancient countess. Perhaps the initial was a kindness from the Almighty, a forgiveness rather than a coincidence.
And who was there at the Madeleine?
Her friends came. Franz Liszt, the pianist, was there. Did you know he had been her lover?
I knew.
The old count was there, very frail, on the arm of a valet. Near to death himself, I'd say. We missed you.
I was in Marseille, Gautier. I did not know.
She had a very decent service.
And who followed her to the cemetery?
Two of us.
Just two?
It was bitterly cold.
Who?
Raymond Vienne and me.
And you were never her lover?
Nor was Vienne. He gave me a column.
If your return hasn't saved me, nothing can. Sooner or later, we mortals must die from what we lived by. I lived by your love, and love will kill me.
Hush, Marguerite. You will live. You must.
You have a success on your hands, Dumas.
So far, so good.
As you can.
But everything depends on her death. On the damn final curtain. Will they laugh or will they weep? With a Paris audience, you can never tell.
The silence out in the house is uncanny. They're not even breathing. I tell you, it's a triumph.
And after all our battles, Madame Doche has been perfect. Listen to her. It's as if Mary herself had taken over the personality. As if Doche had nothing to do with it.
She is an actress, after all.
No, no.
A hollow vessel. An artist.
Tell me you don't believe.
And how she must hate the perfect way she has played
my Marguerite.
Shh.
Here comes the death scene. I want to hear it.
Take this miniature. It's my portrait done when I was still beautiful. I had it painted for you. Keep it. It will help you to remember me later. But if a beautiful young girl loves you one day, and you marry her as you should, as I want you to, and she finds my portrait, tell her it's just the likeness of a friend. If she's jealous of the past, as we women often are, and if she asks you to give up my portrait, then you must do it. I forgive you in advance. A woman who loves suffers too much when she doesn't feel herself to be loved. Do you hear me, Armand? Do you understand? Of course you do.
Ah, Nichette, Gustave, I'm so glad you've come. We sent for the doctor.
My dear Marguerite, you wrote to say you were dying, but here you are smiling and out of bed.
Gustave, I'm so unhappy for her.
I'm dying, but I'm happy too. And I suppose my happiness is hiding my death. I want you all to speak of me sometimes. Armand, give me your hand. They were so good to me, you know, while you were away. Oh. It's so strange.
What is strange?
I'm not in pain anymore. Not at all. It's as if life were coming back. I feel a well-being that I've never felt before. I think I'm going to live after all. Oh, how well I feel.
She's sleeping. Marguerite. Marguerite! She's dead! Oh, my God, Gustave! What will become of me?
The poor girl. She loved you dearly.
Sleep in peace, Marguerite. You loved much, and so much will be forgiven.
Down. Down. The curtain down.
They're yelling for you out there, Dumas. Go on. You've got to show yourself.
And I was afraid they'd whistle us off the stage.
It's a triumph, I tell you. Can't you hear them? You've got the whole of Paris shouting your name.
A perfect, perfect death. A wonderful death.
I said Marie would teach you about life, but she's taught you about death. She's made an artist of you.
My poor Marie. No peace even in death. Now we artists have hold of you. We won't let you go.
Monsieur Dumas, on stage, please, for the curtain call. Monsieur Dumas!
The Lady of the Camellias by Alexandre Dumas the Younger, given at the Vaudeville on February the 2nd, 1852. Was a triumph. All Paris clamored to see it. Among them was Giuseppe Verdi, who wrote at once to his librettist, Piave, that he had a fine theme for an opera. And so Marie, who had become Marguerite, was to change her name yet again to become Violetta in La Traviata. Once more, that scene from life. Young Dumas in Marie's apartment for the first time. Her fit of coughing and his declaration of love, which somehow touched the heart of this golden girl. That scene from life was transmuted yet again into art. Marie and Marguerite was written by Derek Carton. Emily Richard played Marie Duplessis and Simon Shepherd, Alexandra Dumas, with Francis Jeter and Brett Usher as Madame Doche and Monsieur Fechter, who first portrayed the famous lovers on stage. Vanville was played by Colin Starkey, Nanine by Hilda Schroeder, Eugène de Jazé by William Hope, Gustave by John Strickland, the Comte de Mauriac by Clive Panto, Prudence by Jane Wenham, and Comte de Bray by David Sinclair. Arnold Diamond played Monsieur de Casse, Helena Breck, Nichette, and first woman at the auction, Moya Leslie, second woman, Nerissa Knight, Clémence, Nigel Graham, Théophile Gautier, and Henry Stamper, the journalist. The forte piano was played by Gordon Langford. Marie and Marguerite was directed by David Johnston.